Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. Happy New Year. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. One of the suggestions in his book, 365 Ways to Change the World, How to Make a Difference One Day at a Time, may be a quote that you will take with you for some of this year. He suggests, our guest Michael Norton, that on New Year's you need to download the portrait of Samuel Beckett ringed by these words, "No matter, try again, fail again, and fail better." We're talking with the author of 365 Ways to Change the World, How to Make a Difference One Day at a Time. Michael Norton has been involved in humanitarian efforts all over the world. He founded the Center for Innovation and Voluntary Action back in 1995 and the UK-based Director of Social Change. He lives in London. He's in New York right now doing a book tour. And he is the author of several books, including the Worldwide Fundraisers Handbook. The themes in this book include community and neighborhood, culture and creativity, democracy and human rights, discrimination, employment and enterprise, environment, globalization and consumerism, health, international development, peace, volunteering and citizenship, and young people. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. I don't know if we'll get through all 365, but that's what the book is for, and I'm sure that you'll have some things to add as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, 227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, Michael, Happy New Year to you, and thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, Happy New Year, Kathy.
We do run the risk, and you write about this in the book, that the issues that we're dealing with, and for some reason they're weighing heavily today, globalization and war, et cetera, seem so huge that it's hard to believe that there's anything in the world that we can do that will have any kind of meaningful impact.
Well, I think that's wrong. You know, you can talk about all these big issues like global warming, like lack of peace and insecurity in the world, like world poverty, and so on. They all sound incredibly daunting,
mm-hmm.
but it's only when people get up off their backside and do something that change happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we have within us the power to make change by doing little things, by doing lots of little things, and by lots and lots and lots of people doing lots and lots of little things, we can make a huge difference. And so one of the things I say to people is the biggest problem in the world today is apathy, the feeling that you can't do anything, you can't make a difference, your efforts will be so minuscule that it's not worth even bothering. But unless we bother, nothing's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And as you also point out, there are a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. Hundreds of millions of us.
Right, so if a lot of people do a lot of good, will be done.
You know, just the whole global warming thing was fueled by a few people who thought this is a big issue, I must do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine decided that he would first of all reduce his energy use by 20%, his carbon emissions by 20%, and he then set up a website to encourage other people to do the same. And suddenly it becomes a normal thing to do, that people will make a pledge to reduce their CO2 emissions by a certain percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't do it, we're going to be forced to do it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the suggestions. It's a good one, a pledge that we all should make to cut back not 20%. Your friend was going far here, but to cut back 5 to 10% of your carbon emissions, and then you give us suggestions of how to do that.
Yeah, well, we can do 10% really easily, like doing simple things like changing all our light bulbs in our house to low energy. That's a really easy thing to do, and you'll save money as well.
Mm-hmm.
Getting up to 20% is a bit harder. 50% is really difficult and requires a good deal of commitment. But it's possible. I read a book which is a story about a hypothetical American family called the Carbonis who decided to do their utmost to reduce their emissions. And they managed to do it without changing their lifestyle that much.
Hmm. What's the name of that book?
It's called Life on the One-Way Street of Global Warming, I think.
Ah, okay.
It's an English book, but it was written for Americans as well.
Uh-huh. Life on One-Way Street, Global Warming. I'm still astounded by the number of huge vans and SUVs that everybody's driving these days, and you have this great suggestion, which I haven't done yet, but I'm thinking about doing it, is writing this note and leaving it on the windshield of people who have SUVs.
Yeah, there's a website in the UK called Waste Monsters, and you can download fake parking tickets. And on the parking ticket, it looks like a parking ticket, but actually, it's all the reasons why you shouldn't be driving one of these. they cause congestion, they create pollution, and they're too ostentatious at a time when we should be more concerned about issues of global warming. And so you can put these under people's windshields and windshield wipers, and they'll get a shock when they think they've got a parking ticket, but they'll read it and they'll be given a message. And interestingly, the public is now turning against these.
Mm-hmm.
The sales are going down both in my country and in the USA.
Do you have very many of them in the UK or not?
Not as many as you did, but we call them Chelsea tanks. And in my part of London, which is quite affluent, there were increasing numbers, and our streets are much narrower than your streets.
Right.
And the worst thing is people driving a mile and a half to take their kids to school in these. They really do clog up the roads.
Yeah, exactly. Another suggestion you have is for us to try and cut down on our driving as we're cutting back our emissions.
Yeah, well, I'm a cyclist. And,
oh, are you? Great.
A 60-something-year-old cyclist, and I found getting around on my bicycle the best way of doing things.
Yeah.
It may be a little bit more dangerous, but you get there quicker, it's healthier, and, you know, they're wonderful routes you can take down, canals, through parks, and things like that.
It's a whole different way of seeing the world, isn't it, if you bicycle instead of drive a car?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I always regard a cyclist as a social entrepreneur. Social entrepreneur is a rather pompous term for people who take ideas for changing the world and put them into practice. And if you're thinking about travel, the obvious way to travel in city centers in particular, is by bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
So you've created a solution to a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you time to think nice thoughts of your cycling and to have a bit of exercise and
fresh air
as well.
Right. Here's one thing that probably we do a lot of this in America, and I don't know how you start a movement to have it change. Plastic bags and styrofoam things that you put leftover food in, and if you're getting a doggy bag from a restaurant, we must use so many of those things, and it would be very easy for us to just not use plastic bags.
Yeah, and actually it's interesting. Maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when I came to the United States on holiday once or twice, there was a consciousness about plastic bags, and you'd go into supermarkets,
right,
you'd be given paper bags.
Mm-hmm.
That all seems to have changed now, and billions and billions of bags are given out. We use them for 10 seconds, and they'll last thousands of years, and they'll litter up the countryside. They'll be ingested into cows and cause animal death and things like that. They'll litter up our beaches and our parkways and whatever. And, you know, they're a problem. So one solution is to get yourself a really, really nice cloth bag, jute bag, something like that, and take it shopping with you and use it again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, supermarkets in my country have now cottoned on to this, and they now issue what's called bags for life.
Oh, really?
They give you a strong plastic bag, and on it will say bag for life. And it's a bag for life because it's a bag for your life. If it wears out, you bring it back and they replace it free with another.
Uh-huh.
So they're beginning to encourage it. In Ireland, there's a tax on plastic bags, and suddenly the consumer use of them has dropped to almost nothing.
Huh. I've noticed that there's at least one store in this area that gives you a 5-cent discount if you use a recycled bag from their grocery store, which is nice.
Yeah, exactly. So these are little things, and by themselves, they're not going to change all of the world all at once.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to, first of all, do something, and making a small contribution is important. But they're also going to begin to build a movement of people who are doing similar things.
Yes.
And that will make a bigger difference. And eventually, they'll persuade governments or the supermarkets or whoever to change their policies and practices.
Mm-hmm. And it is something that we're simply going to have to do. There is a sense of urgency about some of these suggestions that you make, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that anyone can do is to go onto a website and measure their ecological footprint, which is how many acres of land are required by them to sustain their lifestyle, and then how many acres there are available in the world. In my country, we are consuming, on average, 3 planets' worth of resources.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's probably double that in the USA.
Yes.
And we just can't go on like that. We'll run out of resources. out of minerals, we'll run out of everything. And technology will not be an answer. It'll help, and there will be technological solutions, but we are going to have to change the way we live.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the 20th century was a century of growth and consumerism, and the 21st century is going to be a century of responsible consumerism.
Mm, I hope so. Where do you go to take that test? To your website?
You'll have to give me notes. I'll come back to you on that.
Okay.
after an advertising break,
okay.
Or whatever you have.
Okay. Yeah, no advertising. That's a wonderful thing. Don't listen to advertising, too. You just listen to promotions of shows that are coming on. There are some things that I just didn't know anything about in the book, and I'd like for you to talk about them. What is this hole-in-the-wall, minimally invasive education? What an interesting program that is.
Yeah. In India, I go to India quite a lot. I do some work in India on literacy and other things.
Oh.
And I just came across this project where they wanted to teach kids computer literacy. So instead of giving classes, computer consultancy, IT consultancy firm, had a building, and next door to it was a slum. They just built a hole in the wall and put a computer screen in the hole, and they put a mouse, and there was no keyboard. And they observed how the kids actually learned to use the computer and even invented their own phrases for things like mouse, which that didn't have a name to them, so they invented one. And what was interesting was that people learn by experience, by doing things, by as you quoted at the beginning, by their failures as well as their successes. And these kids actually learned to use the computer all by themselves. And it just inspired this consultancy to feel that there were other ways of getting the message out about how to create computer literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And they created a website called holeinthewall.com where you can find out about it.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And what I liked about that is that the interesting, unusual solutions all over the place that we can just use our brains to change the world rather than just our pockets and our time.
Right.
And here's a really interesting idea. Another interesting idea, which I really love, is called Kiva.org, K-I-V-A. And here you can invest in an entrepreneur in a developing country. So one of the things I do every night is I take the loose change out of my pocket and I put it in a box. And when the box is full, I take it to the bank and then I give it to charity.
Hmm.
So instead of giving it to a charity, you could actually give it to a woman in Ghana or Uganda who wants to set up a business, help them set up their business and get themselves out of poverty.
What a wonderful idea.
You lend them their money online using this website.
Mm-hmm.
When they've made a success of their business, they offer to repay it to you. And you can either accept the repayment or you can recycle it and lend it to someone else.
Hmm.
And it's a really great thing to do. And if you did that, you'd feel really proud that you were helping one person achieve a better life.
Right. And you'd be winning your own little Nobel Prize.
In a way, yes.
Yeah.
And the internet actually enables us to link problems and solutions. Lack of resources with resources terribly easily. And I think that websites like Kiva are really a wonderful way ahead.
Yes, they are.
For solving the world's problems.
Right. And I don't think many people know about a website like that. They'd love to link up with some other individual.
Yeah, I think that one's American. I think there's another one called Neighbor, spelled N-A-A-B-U-R, which is Dutch, where you can sponsor a whole village and donate your time and your skills online to help them. So, you know, there are these really interesting things around.
We're talking this hour with Michael Norton. He's the author of this wonderful book, 365 Ways to Change the World, published by Free Press, How to Make a Difference One Day at a Time. And we're going to start welcoming your phone calls now. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 227-2050, 227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Michael Norton is our guest, and we sure do welcome your phone calls. of ways that you perhaps are making a difference one day at a time, or questions you may have for Michael. His book is 365 Ways to Change the World. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. And Michael has been involved in humanitarian efforts all around the world. He founded the Center for Innovation and Voluntary Action, and he does a lot of work in India, as you heard him say, and I suspect in many other parts of the world as well. Phone lines are open for you, and we'd love to hear from you. We start with Frank from Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Kathleen. Marvelous guest.
Isn't he great?
Yes.
Yes.
I would like to ask him a question, since he will have seen many more of these, but, one of the biggest parts of our footprints, especially in the West and in North America, is the automobile. And I'm sure the guest is aware that in the United States, you know, they're going to put the initiative for fuel-efficient, low-impact vehicles off into the future, waiting for the hydrogen economy. Perhaps he would like to comment on the smart car, which is a highway-capable, very small commuter car available in Europe, which has three times the efficiency of the average North American vehicle and is completely recyclable and attractive, at least in my opinion. And both of you have a good New Year.
Thanks. You too, Frank. Michael?
Yeah. Well, in sort of city journeys, the smart car is wonderful, but there's an even more wonderful one, which is what we use at home, which is it's an electric car made in India, it has a radius of about 30 miles and emits no carbon dioxide directly itself, and is even more fuel efficient than the smart car.
Hmm.
So, yes. By the way, to measure your ecological footprint, you go to myfootprint.org, and it comes up, and you just put in all the things it asks you, and it will tell you your footprint.
Myfootprints.org. And that car made in India, the electric car, is it catching on all over England?
Well, it's catching on in London because we have lots of incentives. We don't pay any annual tax on it. We can park free on certain parking meters. And we have a thing called a congestion charge in central London. You don't have to pay it with this car. And, going into central London will cost about $15 just to cross a particular road to get into central London.
Oh, that's interesting. It's a congestion charge. How often do you pay that?
Once a day if you go into the congestion area.
Oh.
So this has been a big incentive. And financial incentives are one way of helping create change. So one thing that Frank can do is to lobby his government, city government, to try and create those incentives which will encourage people to use smaller cars, hybrid cars, electric cars, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, electric cars are on the move, and on the West Coast here, there are vehicles being developed which will have much longer ranges for driving. 30 miles is not much to travel, and I think they're going to go up to about 100 miles radius.
Mm-hmm.
So they will become a possibility.
Hmm.
And I think they'll become very, very smart, if you like, very fashionable to be seen driving these things.
Right. I hope so. I got to tell you, I came back to work yesterday after a week off. I had 495 emails, probably 450 were spam. And you have a suggestion that we all need to email Bill Gates to get rid of spam.
Yeah. It's,
let's do it.
Let's do it. I originally called the title of that page Spam Bill Gates, but my editor in London said I shouldn't use that. So it's. But I think we should put pressure on people who have the power to do things, to create the solutions, because spam is an irritant. And I know, I have a spam filter and it gets rid of 3/4 of it, but I still get really unseemly pornographic.
I know, disgusting.
Emails.
Ugh.
And we should find a way of dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't do it myself, but Bill Gates could.
Mm-hmm.
And alongside spamming Bill Gates, I do highlight his most amazing work.
Yes, he has.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Right. So if he got a lot of emails, he's doing a lot of great work in the world. He would be open to this to this idea of a solution to spam, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, often philanthropy is sort of add-on, and you can, if you're really successful in the world, you can do an awful lot through your own business.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in India, where I go a lot, the cities are clogged up with auto rickshaws, which are sort of three-wheelers that run on a mixture of kerosene and petrol, emit the most awful fumes. And the company that makes these is called Bajaj and is one of the big philanthropic companies in the country. But they would do much more for India by inventing an electric auto rickshaw that was pollution-free, because people would be able to breathe and whatever. Now, the solution in Delhi was that an environmentalist actually took the city to court for providing him with air that was not breathable, and won the court case. And as a result of that, the city of Delhi, all its public transport is run on compressed natural gas.
Oh, my.
And it completely changed the atmosphere in Delhi, which was, it was unbreathable before.
Yes.
So here's a story of one person
yes.
actually doing something which changed the lives of tens of millions.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you'd like to join us, Michael Norton is our guest, author of 365 Ways to Change the World, How to Make a Difference One Day at a Time. Anna from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Anna.
Hi. I've never been on the air before. It's a little nervous.
A good thing to do for the new year. Express your opinion.
Yes, I'm calling to go back to cars because I think it's the most important thing to discuss. And the one that we can actually make the biggest impact on now in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to mention that there's a documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car? Because here in America, we already invented and came up with and actually had in L.A. on the streets the electric car that could go 60 miles between charges from the home. And there was a man who invented an amazing battery that made it possible to go 120 miles radius from the home between charges. And the company that created this car killed it, along with the... Okay, yeah. So anyway, everyone should see this documentary. It's called Who Killed the Electric Car? And you can get it through Netflix. And... That's all.
All right. Thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, we used to, our first electric car was actually called a Ford Pink, and it was made in Norway, and they made about 5,000 of them. And they were imported from different countries into Europe. And Ford killed those cars because they wanted to concentrate on fuel cell technology, not battery technology. Greenpeace ran a campaign to save the cars. And as a result of that, they were all re-imported back into Norway,
really?
Where they're still being run.
Huh.
I mean, one of the problems is we don't know which technology is going to work, and companies like Ford may be doing things for the future, but have given up on battery technology, which is available for the present.
I haven't seen that film. That was one of the film I wanted to see last year, and we want to get a hold of the director of that film, too, which we'll do in 2007.
But can I make some suggestions about car use? I mean,
yes.
One is what car you use, and obviously Hummers and SUVs and things you can downsize.
I would think so.
But there's also how you travel. I travel around London by bicycle. I walk, and people can do things like lift chair. They can they do carpools, take their kids to school, and so on. There are all sorts of ways of reducing the amount you travel. And if you're going to, say, make a pledge to reduce your carbon dioxide emissions by 20%, why not try and cut down on your travel by 20%?
Right. Yeah, it's a great idea. Are there countries in the world, on one of the pages of the book, you look at the quality of life index and how you can compare one country with another. What countries are most enlightened when it comes to all of these ideas?
Well, I mean, the idea of that was just to look at what constitutes happiness, and there are various pages about happiness. One of the ones I like is the country of Bhutan, which is near India in the Himalayas. Instead of going for gross national product as their index of prosperity, they've got this idea of gross national happiness. but they are run by a king,
rather than by a democracy. So I think it's possible to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at happiness rather than consumption, I think, is an interesting thing to do. And then to think about what makes you happy. And it's not necessarily spending lots of money.
It's not going shopping, is it?
And here's just an idea, actually, which comes from Oxfam America. Instead of having a regular party, regular dinner party, invite 20 people to dinner and have a hunger banquet.
Hmm.
And in your hunger banquet, you draw lots. And three people have a wonderful meal, all the trimmings, candles,
mm-hmm.
and liqueurs and everything else. Five people sit on the floor and have beans and rice and sitting on cushions and having quite a nice time. And the rest of them, the remaining 12 people, just have rice and water sitting on a stone cold floor. The idea of this is that it mirrors world hunger, that 15% of us are well fed, 25% are adequately fed, and 60% go to bed hungry. So that's quite a nice idea for actually becoming more aware of hunger in the world.
I'm sure you've hosted those parties or been to them. How do people respond to them, Michael?
Well, it's a fun thing to do, and you never know when you're invited which meal you'll get. You draw
mm-hmm.
Lots. When you get there. And at least there's something to talk about.
There sure is.
And if you don't want to do that, organize a chain dinner where you invite people to dinner and you charge them $10 and you send the money to your favorite project. And then you ask two people from that dinner to hold their own dinner, and so it goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And people are doing this for all sorts of causes, like AIDS, HIV in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
That's great. How did you get, what was it in your childhood or in your life that got you rolling on all of this wonderful work? How did you become who you are?
Well, I mean, I always talk about trigger points, that there's usually a moment in life when something triggers your interest in something. And I was a rather sort of normal young man who did well at school, played a bit of sport, but not very well, played bridge and drank wine and beer and do things that everyone else did. And then my dad said to me when I was getting my first job, was I going to volunteer? And I hadn't really come across that word even. So I thought, well, why not? And I got in touch with a youth club and became a volunteer youth leader.
Hmm.
And used to go by Monday nights and run sessions with the kids. I always remember there were three 14-year-old girls, and I'd organized this Visiting the Elderly project. And they came to me very excited one day and said they'd had a most fantastic time with the elderly person they were supposed to visit. Because they were supposed to go there and chat and do the shopping and things like that. In fact, they'd taken her out for a walk. So I said, how did they manage to do that? They said, well, we borrowed a wheelbarrow, we filled it with cushions, we carried her down the stairs, we wheeled her around the block. This woman had not been out of her apartment for 2 years. And here was some 14-year-olds finding a solution. And little things like that then sort of inspire you to do more things. And I went on and I thought I had a good idea. I wanted to do something about racism and immigration and the fact that we had many immigrants who couldn't speak English. So I set up a simple home tuition scheme where I got volunteer tutors to go and give lessons in people's homes. And I just got my friends interested. I got schools interested in giving me the names of families. And we just went from there. And I found out later, well, I found out pretty soon that this was the first such project in the country, and I had become the expert in how to deal with kids in school who couldn't speak English.
Hmm.
And I had directors of education ringing me up for advice, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you realize that, you know, little old me, who'd never done anything much before, was actually doing something of immense significance, and people would copy it and do it all over the place. And you begin to get more and more confidence as you go along. Like our caller just now, who's never been on the air giving a call, you know, she'll be inspired by how well she performed to do it again and again and again.
Right.
And maybe she'll end up a spokesman on human rights or something like that. Who
right.
knows?
Who
so
knows?
You start out on this journey. You don't know where you're going. And it can be a fantastic journey.
Hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655. We go to Roy from Iron County. Hi, Roy.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm speaking to you from the snow capital of the Wisconsin.
Really? How much do you have?
Over 80 inches, I think.
Wow.
That's total snowfall.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the thing I was talking about, or going to talk about, was Ford was talking to Toyota about mileage. Volkswagen has a three-cylinder diesel, gets 80 miles to the gallon. I'd like to hear somebody beat that one.
Can you beat that one, Michael?
No, that's great. And if all of us in the country decided to go for more fuel-efficient vehicles, we'd cut the energy consumption of the country amazingly. And that's something that consumers can do. We may not be able to get the oil wells in Iraq flowing, but we can cut our consumption and ease pressure on government and politics, actually, to make the world a calmer, safer place.
Yeah. Let's talk just a little bit, Michael, about the role of the Internet in achieving some of these aims. This is a force that can be used for so much good, can't it? And yet you also suggest one of the days to just not use the Internet for one day. But how we meetup.com, you write about, and all these groups where we can share our concerns with each other.
Yeah, the one I like, which I couldn't have in the UK edition of the book, is Act for Love, which is a dating agency.
Hmm.
And it says, its slogan is change the world and meet your match, on the basis that people who are doing things to change the world might be compatible. I think one of the things I always feel is that we shouldn't be doing any of this stuff out of a sense of duty or because it's worthy. We should be doing it out of a sense of adventure and fun and because we want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried in my book to try and make changing the world a lot of fun by giving people some quite wacky ideas sometimes, unmentionable over-the-air ideas of things they can do that will make a difference, as well as the more serious thing.
Right. We go to Kathy next from Platteville. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I had a comment on a way to recycle things. Excuse me, I'm sorry. There's a Yahoo group that's called freecycle.com, and I'm from Platteville, I guess you mentioned that, and down here they have a specific one for Platteville and Grant County, but it is a trademark, FreeCycle, FreeCycle, and everything has to be free that either you're offering to give away or something you need, and you just email your group and post that message on there and hopefully get a lot of responses, whether you want something or whether you want something to give away.
Mm-hmm.
In our throwaway society, you know, it would be so good to prevent some of the garbage that's filling up the landfills.
Yes.
Now, I tried in the last 3 minutes to try to go back to find where people could join this group, and I can't find that specific one, even going back to Yahoo and how to start a group. So what I would like to do is give the email address of ours down here, and someone could email the leader of that group and ask them if they were interested to start one in their own area.
Okay, and what is that email?
It's Platteville Free Cycle, all one word. It's PlatteVilleFreeCycle at Yahoo Groups, one word, Yahoo Groups. .com.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you want to start your own FreeCycle group, it's in the book. It's freecycle.org, and you start by declaring the FreeCycling Oath of Honor to be a good FreeCycler, and go from there, and it tells you how to set up your own group.
And then how do you actually exchange your stuff or give your stuff?
Well, on the website, it has the methods for doing that. You've got to get publicity and get people onto the website as both buyers and sellers, and then it becomes a network for buying and selling.
Mm-hmm.
So it just starts from there, and every community should have one. And it's an absolutely great idea for getting rid of things that you don't want, and not charging, and in return being given the opportunity to have other people's I don't want stuff.
Great idea.
Christmas presents, Valentine presents, whatever.
Right.
You know, you can buy them and sell them.
Right, and you send them to each other via the mail, or what do you do?
No, you it's in a community, so you just arrange to pick up.
Oh.
So it's just a method for locating someone who has what you want,
mm-hmm.
or someone who needs what you want,
mm-hmm.
and it's got to be free. And one of the interesting things about the book, if I can just give a little plug, is that there's so many
brilliant ideas in the world for making changes, for doing things differently. And in my book, I've tried to catalogue as many of them as possible. And there'll be lots and lots and lots of things that are of real interest to almost anyone and will open their eyes to ways that things can be done, whether they're interested in recycling or brighter neighbourhoods or world peace or whatever it is.
Yeah. Kathy, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, too, how much junk you can see on there and the junk that people really will take free.
I know.
But you can get, you know, that set up that you get a copy of the free cycle, what the new items are on there daily on your email. And that's a good thing. You just log into that message. But on freecycle.com, Michael, I just can't find a place to sign up. You know, it's there, but I can't find a place on there to sign up as much as I tried.
Yeah, well,
so that's why I gave the
I'd email them and ask for details.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you so much for the call. It is true, we have so much stuff, don't we? We've got stuff. Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Perry from Green Bay next. Hi, Perry.
Hello. Yes, I have a interesting show, and I have a comment about spam. Obviously, you know, majority of spam is disgusting, I guess, lack of a better word. But spam, I got to believe, is better for the earth. If they figure out a way to filter it, than getting 90 pieces of junk mail a week.
Mm. Yeah, well, on the junk mail, there are websites you can sign up to so they won't send you junk mail.
Mm-hmm.
So do that.
That's one of the suggestions in the book, to sign up for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through my businesses is a way of marketing, but, you know, 90% of it never gets read.
Right.
And I just believe that it's got to be a lot more earth-friendly to market through the Internet if they can figure out a way to filter the obviously disgusting stuff that comes through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also to give people the right, if they want, not to receive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a bit of an invasion of privacy.
More phone calls in a moment. Our number, and we have some lines open if you'd like to join us. Our guest is the author of a book that's good to have because it starts off the new year in a meaningful way, 365 Ways to Change the World, How to Make a Difference One Day at a Time. Michael Norton is our guest, and our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Michael Norton is our guest. His book is 365 Ways to Change the World, How to Make a Difference One Day at a Time. Now, here's a suggestion, which would be really nice to do today or any time. This idea, I love it, Michael, of giving freely to someone without being asked or being expected to give, without your knowing them or them knowing you. You would make a person's day, right?
Absolutely. A couple of stories here, actually. I just got an email today from someone in Massachusetts called Alex Southmaid, who set up the Give It Forward Today Foundation. And he's still a teen, and he's just set up this mechanism for people to give it forward, to give something to someone who will then give something to someone else. And then on the radio last week in the UK, we had an American called the Secret Santa, who gives out money just before Christmas. He started as a down-and-out, and he'd been fired from his job, and it was a cold December evening. He had no money. He was hungry. He went into a diner and ordered a big meal, and he had no way of paying for it. So when it came to pay, he started fumbling with his pockets, looking for his wallet, pretending he'd lost it. And the owner saw what was happening, took a $20 bill out of the till, came over to the chair, got down on his hands and knees, looked under the chair, and look, I think you must have dropped this.
Oh, what a great story.
The man was so moved, not just by the sympathy, but by the fact that he hadn't lost his dignity by being patronized or, you know. And he vowed that if ever he became well off, he would do the same for others. And he became, believe it or not, a telecoms and cable millionaire. And he's just come out this year as the Secret Santa. He's been doing it for 10, 15 years, because he's got terminal cancer, mm-hmm. and he wanted to tell his story.
Hmm.
And I think it's really, really inspiring that there are ways of helping people and committing unattributable acts of kindness, random acts of generosity,
right.
whatever you want
right.
to call it, is one way. And giving to preserve people's dignity is another way.
Yes. I mean, just the idea, if you're on the toll road today, the idea of paying for the person behind you. Can you imagine if you went to pay your toll and the person said, oh, no, the person ahead of you paid for you already?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be that you'd remember that? You'd talk about it all day.
And then you'd leave a card. I've actually had some cards printed saying commit an act of kindness. And you leave a card for them and you ask them to do the same for someone else.
Yes.
And maybe, you know, this one beginning can create a sort of a tsunami of kindness mm-hmm. across the world.
Yeah.
You never know.
Right. No, you never know. You're right. You never know. Our next caller, what's your name?
Cater.
Cater. Hi, Cater.
Hey. I'm part of a nonprofit that's trying to do exactly the kind of things you're talking about in a kind of an integrated community level. And we're trying to basically help people wake up to the effects of their life on the world around them and then support them in whatever way they're capable of making a change in their life. And I'm interested in hearing your opinions on a problem that we're constantly working on, which is kind of one of motivation and connection. You know, we feel like to really connect with somebody, you have to accept them where they are. You can't be judging and telling them what's right and wrong. But at the same time, you're trying to promote some kind of values, and it's like this fine tightrope between connecting with people and accepting them and also guiding them towards what you consider to be certain values. And I just wonder if you had any thoughts on motivating people, connecting with people, and creating you know, a community sense of effort as opposed to all these different factions with different agendas.
Yeah. I mean, on the values, for example, I've done work in India with street children. And the one thing I learned right from the beginning is that you shouldn't start by saying these children ought to be returned to their homes, because many of them have gone on the streets. There are all sorts of reasons why they don't want to be in their own homes, like child sexual abuse and so on. So you need to start from them and where they are and what they want and work with them. And maybe in the end they will want to go back, and maybe you'll be able to help them go back. But marching in with your own values and saying you've got to do this just doesn't work. And I think that's a sort of general thing across the world. You've got to meet people at least halfway and probably starting where they are. And the second thing I'd say is that we often want people to do too much too quickly. We have a youth volunteering program in the UK where you have to sign up to do 100 hours of volunteering. Now, for many young people, that's too much to ask too soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I've come to the idea that you start by doing something really quite small and trivial. And, for example, if on your computer you visit the rainforest site, therainforestsite.com, just click there, you get an icon, and you click on the icon, and you actually save 1 square meter of rainforest. The site sponsors are paying the site per click, and rainforest is not that expensive anyway. Now, if you do that 365 days a year, you're saving 365 square meters, which is it's quite a lot of rainforest.
Sure is.
And if you get 99 other people to do it with you and set up the Wisconsin Bay Clickers, for example, to do that, you then start getting quite keen on the idea that you can do something about the rainforest, and you move on from there. So I think the starting point is often something quite small, which will inspire people to do something a bit bigger.
Yes.
I'm writing another book on how actually to get active and change the world. The 365 Ways is a book of ideas and inspirations.
Mm-hmm.
And in my new book, I've got at the beginning of the introduction, I've got 10 things to do right now. And my editor wrote to me saying he actually started doing them and he got inspired. So there were 10 really little things to do. So one of the things in your community is to find some little things that people can do that don't require too much effort, which will be a bit of fun and make a bit of difference, mm-hmm. and go from there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thanks so much for the call, Cater. We go next to Eric from Green Bay. Hello, Eric.
Great. Thank Thank you. This is a wonderful show. I wish you guys did more shows like this with the positive things, the positive differences each person can make. The website you were talking about was www.care2.com. And I'm actually a member of that site, and I click every day on the rainforest thing. I just got a kick out of you mentioning that. But, you know, people always talk about how the world needs to be a better place. Nobody rides the city bus. You know, a lot of people are like, the bus only comes once an hour. It'll only come more often if people like you get up and get on it. And, you know, riding the bus is such a feeling of community. And, you know, I've started buying bus passes for my neighbors, you know, to encourage them to ride the bus. And there's just so many little things you can do. And Gandhi once said, you have to be the change you wish to see in the world. And there's few things more true than that. It's my philosophy in life. It's just such a great way to go about life. And yep. Again, that website was care2.com, care the number 2 and .com.
Thanks very much. There's also a wonderful American lady called Jean Gump, and she said, "Don't just leave it to the guy next door to effect change. You've got to do it yourself." And she started out chaining herself to missiles in silos in the Midwest. She was a pillar of the local community, a sort of grandma and middle of the road and whatever, and she just felt so strongly about nuclear warfare and mutually assured destruction, she decided to do something. And today, in her 80s, she's out and about protesting the Iraq war, still at it.
Thanks, Eric, so much for your call and your enthusiasm. Barb is next from Menasha. Hi, Barb.
Hi there.
Hi.
Good morning. I'm calling and wondered if the guest has addressed household battery recycling in his book or if he has some ideas. I recently returned to the Fox Valley after living in Minneapolis for 9 years, and one of the things I've noticed as I called our county landfill to see if they have easy access for household battery recycling. Everything we use in our iPod or flashlight, those little things.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, I could bring it to the recycling center at the landfill. But I thought, as an avid recycler, I just know that it's not very convenient. And if I won't do it, even though I'm very conscious about the environment, I'm thinking all the other thousands of people who are just throwing things like that in the trash. What I was going to mention about Minneapolis was when I was up there, I noticed that Target stores and some of the shopping centers would have a large recycling bin right by their entrance doors. And I often saved my batteries and dropped it in when I went shopping. And when I was up there recently over the holidays, I noticed one of the recycling centers or the little recycling bins had a sign by it, and it said, "Thank you very much for recycling your batteries. We recycle 3 million pounds, and we want to thank you for, you know, saving the landfills."
Yeah, that's a great story. I talk about batteries sometimes when I give public talks because we don't have battery recycling available in our communities in my country. So writing the book, I got aware that batteries were shouldn't be put into the garbage because they will go into the landfill. They'll poisonous chemicals will leach out into the water table. They'll just poison the earth. But what do you do about it? So I was had a battery in a remote or a torch or something that ran out, and I put it on my kitchen shelf. And every morning I'd come down, and it would look at me, saying, "Do something with me." And I didn't know what to do with it. And so change has to start with someone somewhere feeling that they can do something about that problem. And so I could have gone to my local Barnes & Noble, except in my country it's called Waterstones, and said, "Why don't you put up a battery recycling unit there?
Yes.
You'll get more people into your bookshop. You've got lots of space. You can do it."
Great idea.
And I will arrange to collect. So someone's got to start something somewhere for change to happen.
So did that happen?
Not yet. Well, I went to the next stage, which I got a cigar box, and I'm filling it with batteries.
Hmm.
So I'm not throwing it away, but I can't do everything myself. But maybe someone listening will decide to set up a battery recycling
right
team.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, Barb, for your call. We go to Jean next from Ashland. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I was wondering if
oh, we need to make it quick. We're almost out of time.
Solar cooking, using the direct rays of the sun for cooking food, pasteurizing water.
Yes, it's in the book, and my suggestion is that we actually have a solar dinner party and build our own solar cooker, cook dinner for our friends, and understand how the rays of the sun can be used for human benefit.
Mm-hmm. And that's all the time we have. Well, you were a perfect guest to have on this January 2nd. Thank you so much, Michael, for all your inspiration.
Well, thank you, Kathy. And if you ever want me back, I've got a phone number in the UK.
Okay.
I can call you from there.
Oh, that'd be great. All right, we'll do that. We'll do that. Thank you, Michael. Michael Norton, the book is 365 Ways to Change the World, How to Make a Difference One Day at a Time. It has just been published by Free Press. He is involved in humanitarian efforts everywhere, and the book has been adapted for the United States, the United Kingdom, Australia, and India. He founded the Center for Innovation and Voluntary Action in 1995. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Rhonda for on-air production here in our studios. This show, in case you want to tell somebody about it, will recycle or repeat tonight at 10 o'clock. Thanks for listening. This is the Ideas Network.